Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Hundreds of otherwise healthy young people are suffering from a serious lung injury that seems to be linked to vaping. It's heightening concerns about the ubiquity of e-cigarettes, especially amongst teenagers, so we'll talk about that a lot a little later this hour. But first today, let's talk about Hurricane Dorian and the almost unimaginable devastation it has wrought on the Bahamas and where Hurricane Dorian is headed next. And if you're anywhere in Dorian's path, we'd like to know what you're seeing or have seen and experienced. Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Now, you'll remember that when Dorian went over the Bahamas, it was a Category 5 hurricane at that time, and it stalled over the Bahamas for more than 24 hours. Staying at a Category 5, the images that we're seeing out of the Bahamas are almost unimaginable. Total devastation in parts of the islands. Here's Bahamas Prime Minister Hubert Minnis in a news conference yesterday saying the Bahamas faces, quote, one of the greatest national crises in our country's history. And then he said this.
Of the 25 individuals that were transported to New Providence, two has already succumbed. That would take the number of deaths to 7. And again, I want to assure and inform the Bahamian population that we can expect more deaths to be recorded.
That's the Prime Minister of the Bahamas, Hubert Minnis. Well, joining us now from Nassau in the Bahamas is Morgan Chesky, NBC News correspondent. Morgan, welcome to On Point, and tell us, what have you seen?
Hi, Meghna. It has been just a wild past 36 hours here in the Bahamas as Dorian has showed the true devastation that it's brought to, specifically the northern islands here. And you just heard from the Prime Minister, we are outside the hospital here in Nassau where those victims from Abaco Island have been brought via military helicopter to ambulances here on New Providence Island. And then they have been receiving much needed medical care here. And following that statement by the Prime Minister, he went on to add that death toll number will likely be going up in the days ahead, which is striking because in his past, he was a physician. So whenever I spoke to him, he says this hits him especially hard because he knows just how much damage a hurricane can bring. But following that, he says that in his lifetime here in the Bahamas, he's never seen such a powerful storm strike with such fury for such a sustained amount of time. And that's really what has set Dorian apart. It hit Abaco Island, where it first made landfall, with wind gusts recorded of more than 220 miles an hour and a sustained wind of about 175 miles an hour. Keep in mind, the EF3 tornado was bringing speeds of about that same amount, but only for seconds or minutes at a time, whereas Dorian was bringing these winds for hours, leveling everything in its path. As it stands right now, this is one of the first days that relief and rescue efforts are really beginning in earnest on both fronts, simply because Dorian left remnants of dangerous conditions both in the air and on the seas that kept a lot of people from approaching those hard-hit areas on Grand Bahama and on Abaco Island. And we're now seeing that agencies are able to go into Abaco with food, with clean drinking water, to help the 5,000 or 6,000 people, many of which are now homeless in that area. And they're also trying to approach Grand Bahama, where flooding is a significant concern today.
Right. So Grand Bahama, I'm seeing here, at least 3 out of every 4 homes on Grand Bahama underwater, the airport under 6 feet of water, and Abaco Island, as you've mentioned a couple of times, Morgan. I mean, the aerial footage that we're seeing coming out of there, it's unrecognizable as a place of habitation and civilization, totally pulverized. So billions of dollars, at the very least, of damage here. What additional help does the Bahamas need? And, can that aid make its way in?
I think from a help standpoint, they need absolutely every bit of help they can get on multiple fronts. This is an unprecedented storm that has done catastrophic damage to these islands to the point where they may never look the same simply because of the power of Dorian. A lot of these uninhabited smaller islands that have been covered by that storm surge, even after Dorian passes, may never be seen again. From a resource standpoint, of course, you have those emergency aid agencies going in to help those people on the ground. But the Prime Minister saying that, you know, this is a process that will take years to recover from, especially when you hear the early reports that about half of all buildings on Abaco and Grand Bahama are either damaged or destroyed. You mentioned billions. I don't disagree with that number at all, but I think it's very important to note that even though these agencies are just now getting in, we won't truly know the devastation that Dorian has brought to a lot of these areas for days or even weeks to come, simply because the damage is so severe. A lot of these spots are still inaccessible at this point in time. We do know that airstrips are being cleared off of debris, but there's not much you can do whenever you have floodwaters that are covering, as you mentioned, that airport runway in Freeport, which is still submerged. We've seen videos of the police station there flooded. So first responders who are here in the Bahamas facing the same struggles as many of the Bahamian people are from the wrath of Dorian.
Wow. Well, Morgan Chesky, NBC News correspondent, joining us from Nassau in the Bahamas. Morgan, thank you very much.
Thank you, Magna.
So obviously the Bahamas have weeks, months, even years of recovery ahead of the islands, but Hurricane Dorian is now moving towards the east coast of the United States. It has been downgraded from that previous Category 5 rating, but here's Jacksonville, Florida Mayor Lenny Curry urging residents to remain vigilant about Hurricane Dorian. He spoke yesterday.
This is no time to rest and think that everything's going to be okay. This is still a very serious storm effects that are going to come through our coast and could affect low-lying inland areas.
Well, joining us now is Lindsay Kilbride, reporter for WJCT in Jacksonville, Florida. Lindsay, welcome to On Point.
Thank you for having me.
So first of all, what are you seeing there in Jacksonville and how is Florida preparing for what might come with Dorian?
Well, as you know, it's been a slow crawl, this hurricane, so we're all sort of just waiting at this point. There's a lot of evacuations, mandatory evacuations. Two big zones here in Jacksonville had mandatory evacuations. I know that's the same for almost all coastal cities in Florida and up into Georgia as well. So it's kind of a question if people are actually heeding those calls. I know we've had a few big storms over the past few years. You know, there were a lot of Category 5 hurricanes in the Atlantic in 2006, 2007, but then it was almost a decade until Matthew in 2016 when we really saw this again. And then since Matthew, it's just been Irma, Maria, Michael, now Dorian. Mm-hmm. So at least Matthew and Irma really impacted Jacksonville, and people are sort of just comparing this storm to what's it going to be most like. Is it going to be like Irma, where we saw a lot of inland flooding? We saw, you know, areas that never thought they would get flooding. Their houses just filling up with water in sort of like the northwest area of Jacksonville. I think you mostly expect it at the beach, which is what we saw with Matthew. It's looking like it's going to be closer to something like Matthew because it is skirting the outside of Florida, where as Irma kind of went kind of southwest over Florida. So we were on the storm's east side, and that brought some really unique conditions that we're not seeing this time. But, you know, we're just kind of waiting it out. I mean, we've been waiting for so long to see, like, is it coming? Is it going to impact us? We're still going to see that flooding. We're going to see really, really high surf, and it's really going to probably impact the more coastal beach areas, which is what happened during Matthew.
Well, sorry to interrupt there, Lindsay, but I was just going to ask you to remind us sort of what the impact of Matthew was. If it seems like, at least where you are in Florida right now, Dorian might be a little more like be a little bit more like that.
Sure. So with Matthew, it really impacted a city just south of us, which is in our listening area as well, which was St. Augustine, with that, we had just entire roads, just chunks of roads on the coast just missing, just being pummeled by the water. A lot of businesses and homes were flooded as well. So we already see a lot of beach, a lot of the sand is being eroded really badly, even just overnight, even though it's not even here yet. So I think people are kind of thinking more of the beach areas are going to be impacted.
I see. Now, I'm seeing reports here, meteorological reports that say that the Carolinas might be facing a triple threat of high winds, flooding, rain, and storm surges. And as you said, it maybe perhaps not
not that bad in Jacksonville right now, but still, as the mayor said, no time to relax here. Are there evacuations going on, or have there been going? They've been going on in Jacksonville.
Yeah, so evacuations were ordered earlier this week, I believe Sunday afternoon for Jacksonville, and then some of the other cities ordered the same on Sunday and Monday as well. I would say that we are expecting some of the same conditions, 65 mile per hour gusts along the coast. But it's a little different story inland, which is sort of like 40 mile hour gusts. But sustained winds of 35, 54 miles per hour is what the latest I've heard from the National Weather Service meteorologist that's here in Jacksonville. So that's kind of what we're expecting. Obviously, like, the storm surge is probably expected to be half of what we saw during Irma, which is good news because that is really what impacted people in Jacksonville. I mean, a lot of people's homes were destroyed, just completely gutted. I mean, it really impacted some of these low-income communities in the Northwest area who never expected it, and just, you know, like a nearby tributary completely overflowed and their homes were waist deep. We don't think that's going to happen this time, which is good news, but it's still going to be a lot higher than normal. Right now, we already have some really high levels in our river. We just don't have these other conditions Irma brought, we had an incredible amount of rainfall. We had this big south, push of wind that just completely drenched us.
So, Lindsay, we just have about a minute here left to go, and you named all those storms, those big name storms, and I'm thinking at the same time hurricane season is by no means over this year. I mean, have these, the frequency of these big storms, I mean, how has it changed life in Jacksonville?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of talk about, is our city sustainable with the, you know, the with sea level rise with these new storms. So it's definitely something that they're calling on local officials to take notice of and take seriously.
Well, Lindsay Kilbride, reporter for WJCT and NPR member station serving northeastern Florida. She's with us from Jacksonville, Florida. Lindsay, thank you so much, and definitely stay safe.
Thank you.
Well, when we come back, we will talk about this mysterious vaping-related illness that some doctors are saying may be turning into an epidemic. What's your question about that? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. This is On Point.